So we're holding on Nun Zion.
It's a little blurry, I guess. What was that, Gemara over there if you want one?
Okay, so we're holding on Nun Zion Omid Bey, a little bit past the middle of the Omid line against Mimida.
Are we in the new topic?
Right? Nope. We're still on the topic of Menachas and Chametz.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so we left off actually in the middle of a discussion as follows. We mentioned we had two different Tanoim. We had Rabbi Yossi Agili and Rabbi Akiva talking about that when the Pasuk tells us, Kol HaMincha Asher Takrivu LaShem, that you're not allowed to make a Chametz, what does the Asher Takrivu LaShem come to include? He started with Rabbi Yossi Agili saying that it includes you're not allowed to allow the Minchas Nisachim to become Chametz,
right.
And Rabbi Akiva saying that you're not allowed to allow the Lechem HaPanim to become Chametz. So we discussed that, that's true, not necessarily are they arguing with each other. I mean, Rashi says to a certain extent they're arguing primarily because we said in the Gemara that only according to Rabbi Yossi Agili would we be saying that you're allowed to add water to the Minchas Nisachim. If you don't add water to it, then only according to the opinions that may pay this alone are enough to create chametz, only then is there even a possibility of it becoming chametz. If you say that we talked the other day about the idea that you have a question whether may pay this by themselves are capable of creating any degree of chametz or not. So it'll affect that. But then we also mentioned, because if you say that may pay this by themselves can't make chametz, and you're going to say the Minchas Nisachim can't have water in it, then there's nothing to talk about. There's no possibility of it becoming chametz. There's no reason for the Torah to tell you. There's oil, oil is, you asked me that yesterday. The answer is oil is moist in principle. As long as you have moisture, and as long as you have sugars and enzymes and whatever in the flour for yeast to feed off of, then in principle they could. But the difference is that you have in halacha.
Do we treat oil like May Paris?
For that purpose we do. For example, when it comes to Hilchos Pesach, we say, for example, if you were to make if you were to blend oil in when making the masas, it would be masa ashira.
Right.
If you were to make only oil, then you have a machlokes whether it can become chametz or not. Mm-hmm. You have most Rishonim learn that it can't, only if it's in combination with water. However, you would have, so in Shulchan Aruch it brings both opinions. It says primarily the halacha is that only made peiris can be machmis only if they're mixed with water. Made peiris, meaning any liquid other than water, can make it chametz only if there's some water in the mix as well.
So made peiris is
a general expression, meaning any liquid other than water.
Milk,
juices, honey, etc. Yeah.
Made peiris includes oil in other
includes
words?
Includes the fact that it includes oil. It is the juice of a fruit. So what? Maybe it doesn't mean mayim as in something hydrophilic. It means a liquid. Okay. Anyway, the point is, then we mention also in that connection, we mention a machloikas. When it comes to the lechem aponim, the flour for the lechem aponim has to be measured using the isarin measuring cups that they had in the Beit Mikdash. But we discussed machloikas whether those measuring cups for dry things, the chlal, were anointed and made to be a kli of the Beit Mikdash, a kli shorot. If we say that yes, then flour that's measured in there already has kedushas aguf, then it's relevant to talk about that after that, before you bake it, that it shouldn't be allowed to become chametz. If you take the view that the midas hayavish were bechlal not eskadish, and therefore that this isarin measure that they had in this mikdash is not a klisharis, then the flour for the flour is not becoming kadosh anyway until a later stage, until it's baked or until it's placed on the shulchan, and at that time it's too late for it to become chametz anyway. So we ended up saying, actually, we ended up flipping around Rabbi Yossi Agrili's and Rabbi Akiva's opinion and saying that Rabbi Yossi Agrili is the one who would hold that the Midas Hayavish were anointed, therefore the inside of them at least has Kedusha, therefore it's relevant to talk about the Lechem Aponim becoming, or that you're not allowed to allow it to become chametz once that flour got Kedusha Zagof, whereas according to Rabbi Akiva, it's a moot point because it's not before it's baked or before it's placed on the shulchan, it's not kaddish anyway, and once it's placed there, it's too late for it to become chametz. Rather, Rabbi Akiva would be the one talking about that was relevant as far as Minchas Nisachim, that we have to say the Minchas Nisachim cannot be allowed to become chametz. Rabbi Yossi Agili would say that the Lechem Aponim, that the flour for the Lechem Aponim becomes kaddish as soon as it's placed in the Isarin measure. And therefore, it's relevant to talk about after that, when you mix it with water to make the lechem aponim, make sure it doesn't become chametz. Okay. So now the point is, in the course of this discussion, we were taking the view that the only time that you have like this, if the Isarin is Kodesh, then the flower is able to become Kodesh as soon as it's placed in there. If not, then it's only going to become Kodesh at a later, Kodesh as a group, at a later stage, either as Tosfos points out, you have a possibility maybe when it's baked, if you say that the oven is a Kli Sharis, or later on when it's placed on the Shulchan, which is definitely a Kli Sharis. The point being, now on the face of it, we seem to be skipping a stage in the process between when it's flour, between when it's dry flour and when it's baked into, and when it's baked to become the Lachma Panim, it has to be made into a dough. You have to have liquid in there. So that's where the Gemara is going to take it up. We're holding the line between the meat.
The dough cannot become Kodesh.
The point is, on the face of it, we have another stage at which it can become Kodesh. So that's where we're holding the line between the meat. So Amalei Papa Lamaya, Vahika Bisa, what about after you measure the flour? Fine. Let's even say, like Rabbi Akiva, that the Midas, and we said yesterday also, we said Rabbi Yonathan, that Midas Hayabish were not Nimshach, and therefore they don't give the flour that's measured in them. But later on, you're going to take the flour out of there, you're going to put it into a Bisa, which we've talked about a number of times, that term in this Masechta, it means like a mixing bowl, or a Bechlal bowl that they use in the Beis Mikdash, and they're going to mix it with the water, and they're going to knead it in there. The lachu, now at that point, it's moist, because it's got water mixed into it. So at that, for sure, the midas had a lach, according to everybody, were nimshach. So at that point, it should get kedusha saguf. What are you telling me that according to Rabbi Akiva, you go from the isarin straight to the oven, and then to the shulchan, and only in one of those last two is it going to become kaddish? What about if you go from the isarin to the bisa, and only then to the oven, and so forth, and in the bisa, it should become kaddish? So the bisa is something that's used for liquids, and measurements for liquids. Is it not what we're saying? We said yesterday, we said that both Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yoshia would agree, and therefore both Rabbi Yisagrivi and Rabbi Akiva would agree, that the midas halach, the measuring cups for liquids in the Beis Mikdash were nimshach. They do have kedusha. You have a machlokes whether inside and out, or on the inside, but inside they definitely do.
Right.
So that's the question. The lachu is something used for liquids. Why is it not makadish? Why is it not makadish? The flour with water mixture that's placed in it. Amalei, so Abaya answers, because you don't necessarily have to knead it in a bisa. Because then shalosh agave kachavliya. Suppose you could have, for example, the dough for the lechem aponim does not...
That's not enough,
the answer is, it doesn't necessarily have to be in a
bisa.
Listen, can I finish,
please?
The question is, on the face of it, when it's placed in a bisa, at that point it's going to become kaddish.
Okay.
The answer Abaya says is, now, halka, the answer is that it's possible instead to knead it on a kapavlia, which is a leather, which is a leather sheet. Like you spread out leather was the only waterproof thing they had in those days, basically. So you'd spread out something like that, the only waterproof material they had, in a plastic. So you'd put a cover of that on a table or something, and you'd knead the dough on top of that. The point is it's not a keli because it doesn't have a cleat table, it doesn't have a receptacle. Therefore, it wouldn't be makadosh anything. Now, you're asking, so what about if you did do it in a bisa?
Right.
You actually have the Achronim talk about that, the Chofetz Chaim versus Chazanish talk about that. The Chofetz Chaim would say that, yes, learns that, yes, he's in the Kotei Halacha. He writes that, yes, apparently, the idea is, even according to Rabbi Akiva, if you needed it in a bisa, then, of course, it would become Kaddish. All we're saying is, Abaya is pointing out, you don't necessarily have to. The Torah doesn't require you to need it in a bisa, as the Gemara is going to say to you. Therefore, the point is, so you do have a scenario where there's no Kaddish that it's placed in, that's a cliche, until it's placed in the oven or on the shulchan, as the case may be. According to the Chazon Ish, she wants to say that regardless, even according to Rabbi Akiva, even if you need it in a bisa, the fact that you didn't have to means that it doesn't get kedusha saguf from being in that bisa. Okay. Anyway, the point is,
katavlia here means...
Katavlia means a leather sheet.
Oh, it's with a cup. Katavlia.
Yeah.
Like I see it in the Baron Gershon.
Yeah.
But
no, that's not related to the word table.
Tabla is like a tablet sometimes.
That's true, but this is
without the quote,
yeah.
Okay.
Katavli of Apashas is because a lot of words of kata are come from Greek. Kata means down, so Apashas katavli means something that you place down on the table. I don't know what the exact word. Whatever. No, in this case, that's, yeah, Rabbeinu Gershom translates it as oyovish, a piece of dry leather. Okay, whatever. The point is,
Rashi doesn't say anything.
Rashi says or. Rashi says or, it means less. Yeah. Okay, anyway. Okay.
Thanks.
Onward. Okay. So therefore, not necessarily is the flour going to become kaddish before it gets placed in the oven or on the shulchan.
Okay.
So the question is, if you're going to learn like that, you come later Rabbi Yonasan, and then the Braisa that we said before, we quoted before that Rabbi Yonasan had said, you come later Rabbi Yonasan, where Rabbi Yoshia starts by saying, the Midos HaYavish, the dry measuring cups in the Beis Mikdash, were Nimshak also, and they have Kedush on the inside, and Rabbi Yonasan answers him, no, I can prove to you that they weren't Nimshak, because they're not Mekadesh, and he brings a positive that implies, that shows that the Shrei Alechem only become chametz when they're only become kodesh rather when they're baked.
When they're baked.
Hello.
Okay.
Which is long after they're placed in the
Yisroel. Right.
So the question is, lemalei, why doesn't Rabbi Yoshi answer? That's not a proof. You're going to kailei be yisroel the choil, because you could be talking about the pasuk could be talking about a case where you measured the flour using a regular yisroel measuring cup, this one that belongs to choil. You have any sudden measuring cup in the Beis Mikdash, but the Gemara is assuming for purposes of the question that you don't necessarily have to use that. The same way as you don't have to use a bisa to knead the flour for Shtei Alechem, for the Lachem HaBonim. On the face of it, you don't have to use the Isarin of the Beis Mikdash to measure the flour for the Shtei Alechem. So Rav Yonasan is saying, you see that even though the flour was measured in that cup that belongs to the Beis Mikdash, nevertheless, it's not Kodesh, that proves that that cup doesn't have Kedusha. Why doesn't Rabbi Yoshi answer? And that's not a proof. The Pasuk is talking about, if you measured it in a Chol cup, then you're right, it's not Kodesh. If you measured it in a Kli Shoris,
right,
then it would be.
So
that's the question.
Maybe not.
Why don't we learn and see? The answer is, the Gemara says, Hoshi Hashta, how do you think to compare the two cases? Bishlam, a Bisa, when it comes to a Bisa, of course, it's understandable. Loi Kosser Rachmana, the La'evid Bisa, La'melashbe. The fact is, the Torah never says anywhere that you need to have a bisa in order to knead the dough in. Therefore, kiloshla gaba katavlia. So if instead you do the kneading on top of a leather cover, less one go, then there's no problem with it. El isorin, but when it comes to the isorin, what makes you think, given that there has to be an isorin of the Beis Mikdash, the expectation is you're going to use that. Since the Torah says, make an Isorin measure, and we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, we're going to learn that there were two measuring cups for dry things in a Beis Mikdash, an Isorin and a half Isorin. And we know the Torah tells you to make an Isorin measure because the Torah tells us that various Menachos have to be an Isorin.
And once it says that,
Shavish Isorin to Kodesh, Vakayel, the Isorin to Choyel, do you expect, therefore, would Rabbi Yoshia, would Rabbi Yoshia answer that, yes, you're going to abandon, you're going to ignore the one that belongs to Kodesh and instead use any sorin of Choyl? It's not logical.
There is a specific
thing on the Kodesh. That's, of course, there's a person can have any sorin of Choyl in their possession. No reason why not. If a person has, if the Beis Mikdash uses a measurement of any sorin, a regular person can also use a measurement of any sorin. So yeah, you could conceivably have any sorin measuring cup. But the point is, given that the Torah tells you the Beis Mikdash has to have any sorin measuring cup in order to measure the Menachos, logically, that is what's going to be used to measure the Menachos.
And that's Kodesh.
So therefore, Rabbi Yonasan has, therefore, a valid point. If you see that the flour, if you see from the pasuk that he brings that the measuring cup was, that the Isarin measuring cup belonging to the Beis Mikdash is used to measure the flour for the Shtei Alechem, and yet they're not considered Bikurim Lashem, they're not considered Kodesh until they're baked, which is a later stage, then that's a valid point. He has a point, therefore, it sounds like, therefore, the Midas HaYavish were not established. And Rabbi Yoshi can't answer to him, that's no proof, because they might instead be using an Isarin of Choyl, because why would they? If there's an Isarin of Kodesh available, and Torah told you to make one, then the Pashtus are going to use that. But that's an unusual thing. You're not going to say it's a usual thing. The Torah is going to tell you that they only become Kodesh when they're baked. As opposed to this that we're talking about, kneading the dough, the Lechem HaPanim, using a Bista versus using a Ketavlia, both of them are equally valid choices, because the Torah never tells you to make a Bista in the first place. Practically speaking, you're going to have Bistas in the Beis Mikdash because you need them, but they're not an absolute requirement. A Bista is, like we said, a bowl or something. So that's what we conclude, therefore, is that we still stay with what we said before. You have a machlokas whether the measuring cups for dry things in Beis Mikdash, the Isarin and the Chatzis Isarin, whether they were Nimshak or not. That in turn affects the question of whether the flour that's measured in them has Kedushas HaGuf or not. If you say that they were Nimshak, then the flour in them has Kedushas HaGuf. Therefore, it's relevant to talk about after that, when you take the flour after it and start and mix it with water or oil or what have you, it's relevant to talk about, make sure it doesn't become chametz. And therefore, according to the WCAG, really, we're saying, therefore, that's what we're saying. The Lakama funding, you can't allow that to happen. On the other hand, if we say that they're not Niskadish, it means the flour after it was measured in the Yisarin is the same as it was before. It doesn't yet have Kedushas Agruch. Therefore, there's no problem making it Chometz, because, you know, because if it becomes Chometz, it just means, okay, it's possible you start with another Mincha. You haven't been over on a lab, it's not yet considered a Mincha. When does it become considered a Mincha? Only at a later stage, when it gets baked or when it gets placed on the Shulchan. Therefore, at that point, it's too late for it to become Chometz already. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says, it's not relevant to talk about whether to say the Lakam HaFanim can't be allowed to become Chometz. It can only be relevant to talk about whether the Minchas Nesachim, which remains as a flour and oil mixture, possibly with water in it, that you can talk about, don't allow that.
Putting the flour in the sun
does not make it Kurdish, that's what we're saying.
Rabbi
Yisraeli would say that it does. And we said they have a similar machlokas between Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yonatan. With the difference that Rabbi Yonatan holds, the difference is we're saying that Rabbi Yoshia and Rabbi Yisraeli really agree exactly. Because they both agree, both as far as the dry measuring cups and the liquid ones. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yonatan, though, are differing slightly. Because Rabbi Yonatan will say that the liquid ones are only nimshach on the inside. Therefore, any liquid, any wine or oil or what have you that runs over the outside does not become kaddish. And Rabbi Akiva would disagree and say that the liquid ones were nimshach on both sides. Another topic, Tanan Rabbanan, Minayim Mala B'Tzad Chasa. So that's that. Now we're going to start on a new topic. I mean, we're still going to get back to just the Chometz of Menachos, but now we're first going to get on to something else that we learned from those studies. Tanan Rabbanan, Minayim Mala B'Tzad Chasa. How do we know that if somebody takes, we've learned this in Menachos, in Zvachim as well, how do we know that if somebody takes meat of a Chasa, so B'Tzad Ashram, or meat of an Ashram, which neither of those is supposed to be burnt on the back, both of those things are supposed to be eaten by the Kohanim, or the meat of any other Kodshim or Kodshim Kalim, which again, most Korbanis, you don't burn the meat on the Mizeach, it's supposed to be eaten by the Kohanim or the owners or what have you, or the leftover of the Omer, meaning after you took the Kohanim, or from the leftover of the Shtealechem. Now, there's not really a leftover of the Shtealechem per se, because it's not like you put any part of them on the Mizeach. So in fact, you have Meforshim who take out, you have Shittimu Kubetzes, and you have other Meforshim who take out the word, who take out the word Moisa and just have Shtealechem. An argument to the contrary is, in a certain sense, you can call the Shtealechem themselves a Moisa, because you learned earlier in the Masechta, you have two sheep that are brought along with them, which are their Masir. So in that sense, like the Shtealechem are what's left over after the relevant parts of the sheep are offered on the Mizeach. Anyway, so if you offer part of the Shea Lechem on the Mizeach, Lechem Afanim, or the same thing, Lechem Afanim, Shiorim Menachos, or the leftover parts of Menachos that are supposed to be eaten by the Kohanim, Shehuva Loisetzeh. How do we know in all those cases you're over on a Loisetzeh? Talmud Lama. Therefore, the Pasuk says like this, Ki Chosta Erva Chol Dvash Lecha Tidum Imenu Isha Lashem. The Pasuk says any chomet or any honey, you're not allowed to offer from it a fire offering to Hashem, which we learn from that. The word loisak tudumi menu, we learn from that an extra thing. It means not just that you're not allowed to offer sa'ur dvash on the mizbeach, it also means loisak tudumi menu means kol shehu mimenu la'ishin, any korban where you have part of it, mimenu, something of it is already supposed to have been burnt on the mizbeach. For example, from most of the korbanos that we mentioned, where you have the chaylev and the emurim that are burnt on the mizbeach, menachos, you have the koyimet, etc. Harehu b'val taktiru, and then the Torah is telling us, do not offer any other part of it on the mizbeach.
Cannot offer one part?
Not if you can't. No, if you have one part of it that's supposed to be offered. For example, again, an animal korban where you have the emurim are offered on the mizbeach, you're not allowed to offer any other part of it on the mizbeach. Anything where you have part of the korban is supposed to go onto the mizbeach, then you have hareyu b'val taktiru, then the Torah is telling you don't offer any of the rest of it on the mizbeach.
Tell me, what's the question? Minayin lemala mibasar.
Minayin, how do we know lemala that if somebody offers mizbeach hachas, etc.? That's minayin, meaning how do we know this thing? Mind you, the Rambam actually writes that even a person does that, he's over on a loisa, said that Rambam doesn't learn that he's chayav malchus for it, though. He just learns that that it's an isser. The Rambam learns that only if he does it in combination with sa'ur and dvash, only then is he chayav malchus, as we'll talk about later on, the details of the isser of being malchus, sa'ur and dvash.
If he does what?
If, for example, if a person were to take, let's say, the meat of a chatos and then burn it on the mizbeach, he'd be over on a loisa, said he's not chayav malchus for it.
Okay.
Because it's positive study. We just said, kosher mimenu l'ishim harei u'baal takir. Kosher mimenu l'ishim, anything where you have part of the korban is meant to go in the fire of the mizbeach, then the rest of the korban you're not allowed to offer on the mizbeach.
Oh, okay.
So, however, l'ishim takir means you shouldn't burn it in smoke. Okay. So the question is, so we had a list over here. By the way, a number of the Achronim deal with the question. If you're anyway not allowed to burn chomets on the mizbeach, why are you mentioning the shtei alechem, which themselves are chomets? And you have a variety of answers, including that maybe you have, we talked about in Zvachim, a concept that sometimes you could burn certain things which are not supposed to go on the mizbeach, but you could burn them l'shem eitzim, having in mind that they're firewood instead, so we could be saying, you're not even allowed to do that. We learned about it in Zvachim, right? So that's one answer, and you have a variety of other answers. Yeah. Yeah, we have Machlokes over the Ezra. The
Pasuk comes to tell us to again sometimes even though.
Once it's already also under the earth, there's no reason. No, but the point, it's not the Pasuk. The question is why the Braisa is listing the Shtei Alechem. Okay, fine. So the question is, you have this long list, but then Vahatanya, but we learn in another Braisa, that no, Yotu Shtei Alechem Alechem Aponim, that no, another Braisa says, we exclude from this rule the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim, She'ein Mehem Le'ishim, because none of them is actually burned on the fire. Therefore, so a regular mincha, for example, where you take a kaimus and burn it on the mizbeach, then you have an ister to burn any other part of it on the mizbeach. But the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim, none of them goes onto the fire anyway. There's no kol shum imenu le'ishim, therefore there's no bal takdir on them. So that's the question. You have two braisas that contradict each other. Rav Sheshet Enri Gufay Le'ishim. So Rav Sheshet says, you're right. What it means is, the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim, none of the actual Shtei Alechem themselves goes on the fire. None of the actual Lechem Aponim itself goes on the fire. Therefore, when it comes to, so Rashi says, when it comes to Hagosha, when it comes to, we're saying so what it is this Yotu Shtei Alechem and Lechem Aponim is not referring to the Issur of Baal Taktiru. It's referring to the fact we learned before, and we're going to learn later on in our Perek, that the first stage of the process, once a mincha is brought, you have to do Hagosha. You touch the keli containing the mincha to the southwestern corner of the mizbeach. So later on, a braisa says that you don't have to do that with Shtei Alechem, and you don't have to do that with Lechem Aponim. And the reason is because none of them is burnt on the fire. So the question is, here we just finished saying a braisa that said that anything, kol shum imenu le'ishim, anything where part of the korban goes on the fire, then you have an issur of bal taktiru on the rest, and that includes the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim. But the second braisa is saying, on the other hand, the Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Aponim are not She'ein Mehem Le'ishim. None of them is burnt on the fire. So the question is, are they something that part of them goes on the fire or not? Rav Sheshet Enri Gufay Le'ishim. But Rav Sheshet says, the difference is, the Shtei Alechem, the Lechem Aponim, none of the actual Shtei Alechem themselves, or none of the actual Lechem Aponim themselves, goes on the mizbeach. So as far as Hagosha is concerned, the point is, as far as Hagosha, therefore, they're not like other menachos, therefore you don't have to do Hagosha. But when it comes to the issue of lois takturim imenu ishal Hashem, not to burn part of a korban where a different part was placed on the mizbeach, we do consider the Shtei Alechem have the kvotim that go along with them. That's considered all part of the korban for that purpose.
With the kvotim,
they're all considered one big korban, and therefore you have shemimenu l'ishim, you have part of the kvotim is placed on the mizbeach, therefore you have an issue to place any other part of the kvotim or of the lechem on the mizbeach, so even though none of the lechem itself goes on the mizbeach, but it's part of a larger korban where some of it does go on the mizbeach.
In that sense,
but not as far as Hagosha. As far as Hagosha, we say we look at the actual mincha portion itself. And since, unlike most menachos, where some part of it does go on the mizbeach, that's not the case with the Shtei Alechem, then therefore there's no, you don't have to do Hagosha.
Is there something that we're getting to from previous, or are we kind of just...
This is a separate topic, and then we're going to continue analyzing this, and we're going to continue analyzing this, and analyze how this relates back to the urban
Hagosha.
Hagosha is, you take the bowl containing the mincha, and you touch it to the corner of the mizbeach. That's it. That's Hagosha. Okay. And the same thing with the lechem aponim, same idea. None of the lechem aponim themselves goes on the mizbeach. Therefore, you don't need to do Hagosha with it. On the other hand, the larger korban, which is the lechem aponim, also includes the shnei bezichei levoina, and those do go on the mizbeach. So you still have kol shum imenu l'ishim. You still have part of that larger korban goes on the mizbeach. Therefore, there's an issue to place any of the lechem aponim on the mizbeach.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
you do agash, you bring the bow and you
touch it.
Touch against the nisa.
Yeah.
Right? So
mm-hmm.
that, the fact of doing that should tell you that the outside of the bow is also...
That has not, no, no, no. If you were talking about a bowl, if you were talking about a bow, you were not talking about a measuring cup. You were talking about a bowl that's used for the mixed mincha. The mincha already contains flour. It's a bitta, as we said before, or whatever. It's a kli lach, as we said before. Yeah, machloket, whether it's a kli lach or a skadish. But even if you say they're not in a skadish machloket, all that means is as far as beirutim, all that means as far as what runs down the side. You still have. The Torah tells you to touch the keli to the mizbeach, the dayah, you're not enough. Then that means the outside of it is fine. You touch the mizra, you put it in a mizra. Okay, so we have the four avodas. The Hagosha is not one of the four avodas.
No.
It's not. But no. So the four avodas of a mincha are smitta.
Only for keli lach.
Yeah, well, the point is that you have the mincha is placed in a kli shoris, and that kli shoris is touched to the outside of the mizbeach. Whether the outside of that kli shoris has kedusha as far as the din of what runs over the side has nothing to do with the question of touching the outside of a hagasha. They're two completely.
You do hagasha with the outside.
Okay, I hear what you're asking, and the answer is one has nothing to do with the other. One has nothing to do with the other. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When we discuss whether nimshach nim mevachot or whatever, we're talking about can they be mekadesh the flour or the oil or the wine or what have you that runs down the outside. Nothing to do with whether the outside of the keli containing the mincha is touched to the corner of the mezeach and that accomplishes the mitzvah of hagasha. One has nothing to do with it. One has nothing to do with the other. Can we continue? Okay, so you're asking for a summary of the four avodas. So the four avodas of the mincha are knissa, which corresponds to shchita. Matan the kli, you place the koimus in a keli, that corresponds to Kabbalah. Hilocha corresponds to hilocha, you walk it over to the mizbeach, and throwing it into the fire corresponds to zrika of the dam. Okay, let's go on. Okay, fine. Ishmael, so now we have another discussion. Hamala mikulam al gabi akevesh. Now we just talked about that you're not allowed to put put seod and dvash on the mizbeach, and also that we said you're not allowed to put any part of a korban which is not meant to go on the mizbeach, for example, the meat of a chatas or asham, etc. If you put it on the mizbeach, we said a person is chayiv. What happens? Amala mikulam al gabi akevesh. What if he puts one of them onto the ramp of the mizbeach? Rabbi Yechon on the chayiv, Rabbi Lozor on the poser. So we had a somewhat related discussion in Zvachim. We had a question, to what extent is the ramp considered part of the mizbeach? But we didn't have this particular discussion. Okay, so Rabbi Yechon says he would be chayiv as if he put it on the mizbeach itself. Why, Tanya? Because we learn in a braisa. When the pasuk is mizbeach, the pasuk says that you're not allowed to place the ur and vash on the mizbeach, in the el mizbeach. From that, you would only know that it applies to the mizbeach itself. Kevesh minayin, how do we know it also applies to the ramp of the mizbeach? Talmud Lema of El Mizbeach Lo Yalu. Therefore, the pasuk says to the mizbeach, implying the ramp, which is like on the way to the mizbeach, you're also not allowed to put them up. So therefore, the same issue applies to the ramp as it does to the mizbeach itself. The kevesh. Rabbi Loza on the pasuk, whereas Rabbi Loza says he's pasuk. My timer. The omar kros seor and dvash. The pasuk says like this: you're not allowed to offer seor and dvash. You're not allowed to offer hummus or sourdough, whatever, and honey. By the way, honey over here doesn't just mean honey from bees. It means any kind of fruit sweetness or fruit juice or whatever. Not just dates. Any kind of fruit sweetness or whatever. Fruit juice. Yeah. Fruit, yeah. Okay. So, Korban Reishis, then the pasuk continues. Korban Reishis Sakrivu Oisam. Then the pasuk continues. You may bring them for Korban Reishis, for recording basically. Meaning Oisam. Yeah. Because what do? We bring Sa'ur for the She'alasam, which is the... That's the question. So Rabbi Loza says, the word Oisam teaches us, Oisam hu de Rabbi Loch Kevesh Kamezeach, only when it comes to Sa'ur and Dvash, only there do we have that, the Kevesh is like the Mizbeach, and you're not allowed to place the She'alechem or the Bikurim on the Kevesh, Avam Midiachuin Aloy. But other things, for example, the meat of the Chassas or the Oshem, etc., that wouldn't apply to you. That's the meat from Oisam. He would have said it applies only to Sa'ur and Vash. That's why it says Oisam. Oisam, only those things that we last mentioned, Sa'ur and Vash, only those things are you not allowed to put on the Kevesh. So the Shtei Alechem and the Bikurim are both Bikurim. They're both Reishis. The Shtei Alechem is the first korban of wheat that's brought that year in the Beit Mikdash, that year's wheat crop. And Bikurim is the first fruit of that year. So, Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan, I oisam my Ovid. Like, fine, what about Rabbi Yochanan? What are you doing with the word oisam? Now, Tosfos points out, again, we learned in Zvachim, we had an opinion saying that you're not allowed to offer them on the Mizbeach for a korban, but you're allowed to burn such things on the Mizbeach for the same eisim, if you're having in mind that they're firewood. So we had cases over there, we had a case, for example, you had a vorim of an oilo that were mixed up with a vorim of a chafos, and we had a machlokes, what do you do with them? Do you just discard all of them, or do we say you burn them on the Mizbeach, and whichever ones don't count, then they count in the same eisim? So Tosfos says, Rabbi Yochanan over here could have said that that's what we're using the word oisam for. Tosfos just leaves that as a question, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan do that over here in the Gemara? In Zvachim, Tosfos explains that Rabbi Yochanan wanted his limud to work according to everybody, according to both opinions. Okay.
So he didn't remember that.
Yeah.
Say it,
I may have, I don't remember. Okay, so Rabbi Yochanan, hi, oisam, so what is Rabbi Yochanan doing with that word oisam? The answer is, he uses it to teach us what it says in a braisa as follows. Now, we're saying that you have the tzibur brings a shteh lechem once a year. Yochu, yehe yochid misnadeh, or maybe kayetze bonadava. You would think maybe a yochid is able to bring shteh lechem on his own, and whenever he wants, voluntarily. The kodani bo moises fasecha tishmer valtisa. And if a person were to make a neder to do that, I'm going to bring shteh lechem, then it would be like any other neder, and he's obligated to keep it. Talmud Lomar, therefore, the Pasuk specifies Korban Reishis Takrivu. So therefore, the Pasuk says, you plural, Takrivu, you may bring a Korban Reishis, which again includes the Shtei Alechem, because the Shtei Alechem are the Reishis, they're the first Korban from the wheat harvest of that year.
Sure.
Sure, Simon. Meaning, Tzibur, Amar Tila Chavala Yochid, meaning this, that the Shteh Lechem can be brought, is only the Tzibur can bring it, a Yochid cannot, because the word Takrigu is plural.
Doesn't mean Nesa.
No. So the question is, it means the Tzibur. So the question is, Yocholo Yehe Yochid maybe. So you'd think, okay, based on that, fine. So Yochid is not able to bring Shteh Lechem some other time. Because you could argue like this. You know why a yachid can't bring it voluntarily? Because you don't have any other case where a yachid is obligated to bring shteh lechem. So there's no logic to say that something that he's not ever obligated to bring, that he should be able to bring voluntarily, unless the Torah specifically says so. But fine, so he can't do it voluntarily. Avo yehi sibur maybe, but you could argue maybe the sibur should be allowed to bring a voluntary shteh lechem when they want. Now, Rashi explains, how does that? Because Rashi learns it here and a number of other places that Sibur can't just one day decide we want to bring in a double. So therefore, Rashi explains like this. What it means is, we learned before that they had a number of shofars, Dr. Pushkas, in the Beis Mikdash. They had 13 of them arranged in a circle. Six of them were meant for Nadava, namely you have various cases that we've learned in Zvachim, we've learned in Armistice, that we've learned here and there throughout Shas, that you have cases where a person has money that couldn't be put towards a certain korban. Let's say, for example, he already brought the appropriate korban and he has extra money left over, so it goes into one of these Nadava boxes. And eventually, you know, in Shkolim, Shkolim is where it describes the 13 boxes. But we also learned about it in Ksubas, and we learned about it in Benathic and Bava Kama, and yeah.
Don't go head to head with Galileo.
Okay, it comes up in a number of places. No. Okay. Whatever. The point is that eventually, when the Nadava boxes get full, or not even when they get full, but whatever, the Sibu uses them to bring Kayet from his Zeach, Korbanos for when there's Korbanos Ola that are brought when there's no other Korbanos being brought, in order for the Zeach shouldn't be idle. So Rashi learns over here the same idea, in other words, you could conceive you have the last six. The last six, yes. Yeah.
The one goes to each sheret?
No, so what we talked about, we had some place, I believe it was in Bava Kama, we had a machloikas, whether there's six, because there were six bate of for each mishmar. Each mishmar served in turn the Beis Mikdash for a week, and each one, according to one opinion, was divided into six bate of. Or is it that there are six, because there are six different possible cases where you could have leftovers, moisa chatas, moisa asham, moisa kine zavim, etc. Anyway, the point is that that's how it is. The Rashi looms over here, the same idea then. Conceivably, you could have that the tzibur at some point they could open up one of these nadava boxes and take out money and buy wheat and make and bring shteh lechem at random sometime during the year. How do you know that not? And after all, Shemedi Chayvot Echayetzibah, given that the Tzibur is required to bring such a thing once a year on Shavuot, maybe they're allowed to bring it voluntarily other times during the year. Therefore, Tamad Lema Oysam, therefore, that says the Braisa, and this is what Rabbi Yochanan is bringing, that is why the Pasuk says Oysam, only those things can you bring at the times that you're told to. Uma Yesh L'chola Habi. So, continues the Braisa, so what is the Pasuk implying? What are you able to bring? Now, what exactly is the Korban Reishis that you're bringing from Chometz and from Sa'ur and from Dvash, respectively? Shteh Lechem mina Sa'ur. Yeah, the Shteh Lechem are brought using Sa'ur. They're made from Chometz, as we learned earlier in the Perek. Bikurim mina Dvash. And Bikurim come from honey, because Bikurim come from the Shiva Taminim, of which five are various types of fruit that contain sugar and juice and whatever, and that's Dvash. So that's what the Torah is telling you. You can bring Bikurim, which you're required to. You can bring the Shteh Lechem, which you're required to. Other than that, there's no Sa'ur and no Dvash that are ever brought to the Beit Hamikdash.
So Shteh Lechem from Sa'ur,
and Bikurim from Dvash. Right.
And that's it.
So that's it. Yeah. By the way, you have a number of interesting explanations. In fact, why is it that the Torah after is Sa'ur and Dvash? We say it every day in Davin, right? You also have a called Dvash, like a certain minute of Shal Hashem. But Taka, what's the reason behind it? You have a variety of ideas that's not. So you have a number of different ideas. The Chinuch says, I didn't find an explicit reason for it, but he says, given that I'm writing Sefer HaChinuch for my son and his friends, that they should have what to occupy themselves with usefully on Shabbos, then I want to give a reason that'll appeal to their minds, and maybe eventually they'll find something deeper. And he gives a sort of balabatish explanation that Sa'ur represents Gaiver, so like Pasta, and then Dvash also is like also, yeah, well, Sa'ur is what makes comments, yeah. Dvash also is like it bubbles up and whatever, and therefore the Torah, therefore the Torah. Yeah, it's like juice, whatever, it makes things puff up also, like you put it in dough, and that's also, it represents a form of.
Sometimes when you have a nice fruit punch, bubbly.
Well, never mind that. We'll talk about when you put it in dough or something. To a certain extent, it has the same effect that the Chinuch says here. It's in the midst of Sa'ur and Vash here. The Chinuch says like this. The whole idea of Korbanos in general is that a person should think the right thought and realize I'm in the Beit Hamikdash, I'm before Hashem, therefore I should, everything about the Korbanos is meant to make a person focus on the greatness of Hashem and the smallness of the person and how much he owes Hashem. We're talking about when Korbanos are brought,
after the Korban,
we don't have that. So actually, what he says is, sorry, I got it wrong. What he says is like this, Chometz takes time to make. So therefore, not having chometz, he says, represents the idea that there's no taking your time in avodah. You have to be quick about it. Zrizu. Have a kalkanesha, he says. And as far as dvash, he says that the idea is that dvash represents sweet things, like the pleasures of life and whatever. And the point is, a person shouldn't be into the pleasures of life. You do what you need to. You eat, for example, what's healthy for you rather than what tastes good.
You like that one?
Yeah, again,
I don't like it.
Okay. So again, he says that these are... Okay, so... come on, people.
Okay.
So again, the point is... So he says these are like kindred... Come on, new... So he says these are like kindred... New? Okay, I'm
not
sure. Can we go on? Okay, so the point is, he says that these are explanations maybe that are appropriate for sin. Then he goes on to say he brings the reason from the Ramban which is the reason I was thinking of before, that both Sa'ur and Vash represent like bubbling up and then raising up and whatever, and therefore they represent Gaiva. Okay, whatever. You have also an idea. There's an idea that's brought a comet. I don't remember from who. Something along the lines of comet is sharp tasting,
yeah,
and Dvash is sweet tasting.
Uh-huh.
Well, then Dvash is sweet tasting, and therefore, like the Torah is saying, like you don't necessarily need to, you shouldn't be going to the extreme. As the Rambam says, you want to go in general and derech hamitzua in the average way with most midas, not to one extreme and not to the other. In Chassidus also, so in Chassidus it talks about the idea that Sa'ur and Dvash represent gvurois.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you don't want them in the korbanos, which are supposed to be to revoke chesed from Hashem. Okay. Anyway,
it's not only individually, it's also together, right?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about together. We're going to talk about later on. But right now, we're talking about individual. Okay. Continues the Braise. Okay, so now, okay, so that's that. So the Braise that clarifies for us that the word oisam teaches us that you cannot bring shtei alechem or bikurim as nedava. You can bring them when you're required to, and that's it. Okay. So the question is, shtei alechem la yikruv nedava? Are you telling me you're not able to bring shtei alechem, that the tzibur can't bring it as a voluntary korban? V'hatanya, but we learn in a Braise that seems to contradict that. The Braise says like this, im nema kol sa'or lama nema kol dvash, v'im nema kol dvash lama nema kol sa'or. Why does the Pasuk have to repeat the word kol both in connection with sa'or and in connection with dvash? Later on, we're going to talk about the idea that kol, it could have been, well, I'm not telling you about it, because it said kol sa'or dvash, or kol dvash with sa'or, or whatever. Why repeat the word kol? Later on the Omud, we're going to start talking about the idea that kol teaches us that you're not allowed to do less than a kezias of it, you're not allowed to have it mixed with, you're not allowed to bring makru of it mixed with other things, but why does it need to repeat kol by each one of them individually? The reason is, because each one has a certain advantage when it comes to korbanos that the other one doesn't have. So if we only said kol by one of them, you would think it only applies to that one, you wouldn't know it applies to the other one. Namely, sa'ur hutra mikol ebemikdash. Namely like this. When it comes to sa'ur, you have an exception to the rule, you are able to bring it to, you are able to offer it as a korban in the bet mikdash. On the other hand, dvash lo hutra mikol ebemikdash. On the other hand, dvash, you don't have such a heter to bring it as a korban in the bet mikdash. You bring it as a korban, but that's not the same as a korban, because you only give it to the korban. On the other hand, yeah, when you bring the korim, you bring the korim, you bring the basket of the korim to the Beit Mikdash, you reach fruit, the dvash, that's what we're saying, you bring the basket of fruit, you say the whole declaration that we take hold of it in that God, Adami Ovidavi, etc., the whole declaration that it says at the beginning of Parshas Tisavri, you wave it together with the korim, and you give it to the korim, that's the korim.
Do you have an understanding of the history of the word dvash, when it started to mean bees honey?
Not specifically. I mean, I think in general, the idea is that dvash in general means sweetness. So therefore, it can mean bees honey, which is sweet, or it can mean food honey, which is also, I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's honey, it's the juice.
It's
a liquid.
But the point is, it's not necessarily you bringing it as a separate liquid. When you bring the korim, for example, you're not bringing date honey, you're bringing the dates themselves. But they contain, because they contain within them sweetness. They contain that sweetness within them, and therefore it can be called.
Dvash means really both. It means fruit themselves.
Right.
Sweet fruit or sweet
or the sweet syrup or honey or whatever they call it. Right. Okay. So the point is, the Braise is saying that sa'ur, you have an exception to the rule. You have a case where sa'ur can be offered as a korban, as opposed to dvash, you never have such an exception. So therefore, if it only said cold dvash, then you would think, okay, but sa'ur, maybe we should be allowed to offer small amounts of it or whatever. On the other hand, the yesh v'dvash, Sa'ur hutra mikol ebemikdash. Sa'ur, you have an exception to the rule that you're able to bring it as a korban in the Beit Mikdash. Dvash le hutra mikol ebemikdash. On the other hand, honey, you never have an exception. You never bring honey or sweet fruit, that is, as a korban to the Beit Mikdash. On the other hand, there's an advantage to dvash. Dvash hutra bishyon minachas. On the other hand, when it comes to the leftovers of the minachas, we learned the other day that the koyanim, even when they have the leftovers of the menachos after the koyanim was offered, and they're baking it and eating it however they like, they're not allowed to allow it to become hummus. They have to eat it as masa. So sa'ur is not allowed there. But they can mix honey into it. They can mix fruit juice into it if they want. So therefore, it's a dvash. Yeah. Dvash hutra b'shiori menachos. So on the other hand, honey is mutter when it comes to the shiori menachos. You want to knead the dough in fruit juice. So you want to fry it in fruit juice. You're allowed to. As opposed to sa'ur, loy hutra b'shiori menachos, as opposed to sa'ur is also even then. So therefore, continue, finishes the Braise. So thus you have to say, nesh yesh b'sa'ur masha'ein b'dvash. Therefore, since sa'ur has an advantage that dvash doesn't have, namely that there is a time when sa'ur can be brought to the korban, and on the other hand, yesh b'dvash masha'ein b'sa'ur, on the other hand, honey has an advantage that sa'ur does not, namely that you can mix the shiori menachos with it, therefore, hutzrach loimah kol sa'ur, but hutzrach loimah kol dvash. So that's why it has to say kol by each one of them individually. You couldn't derive one from the other. So now that we have that braise, let's ask. Sa'ur dehutam is called a b'mikdash ma'inu. When you're saying that there's an exception where sa'ur can be brought as a korban in the b'mikdash, what are you talking about? Lav shtei alechem b'korban adava. On the face of it, we have to mean that you can have voluntarily you bring the Shei Alechem. You can't say that it means the statutory, the required Shei Alechem that are brought on Shavuot, because those indeed are not brought on the Mizbeach. You only have the Kvotim with them that come on the Mizbeach. None of the Shei Alechem of Shavuot goes on the Mizbeach. So arguably, if the bride... No, that's Lachem HaPanim.
Yeah, so what do they go
to? They lay the Shalachim, and they're waved together with the Kvotim, as we learned before in the Sefer.
Yeah.
And then that's it, and they're divided up, and again, they're divided up among the Kvotim. Yeah. As opposed to, if the Braisa is telling us that you have a case where Sa'ur is Mutter as a Korban, and on the face of it, a Korban means to actually offer part of them on the Mizbeach, on the face of it, therefore, what the Braisa is telling us is that sometime during the year, the Sibur is allowed to say, we're going to take from one of those Nadava boxes and use the money to buy Shei Alechem, and some of that Shei Alechem, a Koyimus of it is going to be taken and offered on the Mizbeach, even though it's Chomet, and the rest of it is going to be eaten by the Koyimus. That's what we're saying. Well, no, it would be a carbon sibur, but in other words, the point is not only the required one, but also an adava. On the face of it, that's what the Braita is saying. No. We're saying this. We're saying here we're talking on an adava of a sibur. A yachid we already took out from the word taklivu. Right. Okay. So the answer is Amr of Amram loy. No, says Rav Amram. That's not what the Braita means. What the Braita means is it is talking about the actual Shtei Alechem of Shavuot. It means Likravi Mohim. It means the Braita is telling us. The fact is, again, you have the Shtei Alechem can be thought of as a larger korban, which includes two kvasim and two loaves of bread. What we're saying is, the fact is, you have a hutru miklolon, that you have the Shtei Alechem can be part, the Shtei Alechem, which are chometz, are able to be part of a korban, where a portion of that korban, namely the emurim of those sheep, is placed on the Mizbeach. And the Shtei Alechem participate in that and are considered part of that korban, even though none of them themselves goes on the Mizbeach. The Braita is not necessary. The Braita is not implying it's not a contradiction. We're saying we thought that the Braita was implying that you were able to bring Shtei Alechem to Dava sometime during the year and actually offer some of them on the Mizbeach. Now Rav Amram tells us, no, you're misunderstanding the Braita. What the Braita means to say is, the fact is, the Torah is telling you bring Shtei Alechem on Shavuot as a required korban. But that korban, some of that larger korban, namely the emurim of those two kvasim, is going on the mizbeach. None of the Shtei Alechem itself touches the mizbeach. Chomet never goes on the mizbeach, period. But the point is that you have, the fact that you have once a year a korban which includes chomet, and where some part of that larger korban goes on the mizbeach, that can be considered an exception to the rule of no chomet.
It really doesn't go on.
So even though the chometz itself doesn't go on in the Mizbeach, the part of the larger korban of which this chometz is a part does go on. Okay, but that's the point. That's the point. That's what Rav Amram is saying. That's what the Braita means. I forgot to mention, by the way, when we were talking about why not Sa'ur and Vash, there's another verse from Baal Shem Tov, it's brought in Kesef Shem Tov, that another explanation why it is that you're not supposed to bring Sa'ur and Vash, and why it is that you can bring them as korban reishis. So he says, similar to what the Chinuch says from the Ramban, that they represent Gaiva. But the idea is, so Gaiva has no place in a person's Avodah. On the other hand, when a person is first starting out in Avodah, Korban Reishis, yeah, then fine. If a person still has Gaiva, then fine. They still have to start working, they still have to start serving Hashem, even though they still have that Gaiva, even though they still have that Sur and Vash, Korban Reishis. But afterwards, on the Be'ach, La'yalo, the Be'ach, the Faya, after that, you're expected to get rid of it in order to become a true Oved Hashem. That's from the Baal Shem Tov. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, Ihochi, in that case, if you're going to explain that the Braita is not talking about the Shtei Alechem themselves, but rather their accompanying Kvotim, Bikurim Nami, then you could argue the same thing is true as far as Bikurim. Bikurim are also accompanied by Korbanos, which go on the Mizbeach. Okay. Namely, the Tnan, we learn in a Mishnah in Bikurim, had Gozlois Chav Gabe Astalin, the young birds that were on, they were like hanging off the sides of the baskets of Bikurim. When people brought Bikurim in their baskets, they would be hanging off the sides of the baskets, they would have birds hanging there to decorate the basket. Gozlois means young birds, pigeons, no, it's Malachim Gozlois, meaning a young bird. Those they would offer as oilos. And then the baskets that are in their hands would be given to the Kohanim. You actually have different stories over here. You have the Rambam understands that what it is you'd have, there would be birds hanging off the sides of the basket. In addition, you would also have, they'd be carrying birds in their hands. So the ones that are hanging off the baskets would be offered to the Kohanim Oila. The ones that are held in the people's hands would be given to the Kohanim as a present, along with the Bikurim. Yes, apparently they were alive. And then the driver disagrees with that and learns that what it means is that there's no birds in their hands. And Rashi over here says similarly, there's no birds in their hands. There's just birds hanging off the side. Those are offered as oilers to accompany the Bikurim. And then you have the Bikurim themselves that are in the people's hands are given to the Kohen.
Why did they need birds?
They didn't need, but it's the Gemara's answer. Hanu after Bikurim, who do also? The answer is those birds are not an essential part of the Korban. They're brought in order to decorate the Bikurim. They're not required to be brought. Now Rashi brings from another Mishnah in Bikurim and from a Gemara in Sukkah that you are required to bring a korban together with the Bikurim. However, Rashi brings from the Yerushalmi that what it means is you're obligated to bring a shlamim together with the Bikurim. Here we're talking about these birds are oilers. In fact, what they did is Mishnah in Bikurim described how from every region in Eretz Yisrael would come and bring the Bikurim. They make a whole procession out of it from every city, whatever. And they would have leading the procession. They'd have an ox. They'd decorate it. They'd have its horns would be plated with gold, and it would be wearing a crown of leaves and whatever. And then they'd have a whole procession going to the Beit Mikdash, and eventually that ox would be brought to the shlamim. So that's the korban that has to accompany the shlamim, as opposed to the shlamim don't have to be accompanied by oilers. So therefore, these birds that come with the shlamim can't be considered. You can't say therefore that the bikurim are part of a larger that the birds are part of a larger korban that include the bikurim. No, because they're not really part of the korban at all. They're just a separate thing.
The real korban
is the actual bikurim themselves, and then you have as a side thing you have to bring a shlamim with it. It's not one big korban that includes a shlamim and that includes a shlamim and bikurim. That's the point. They're not actually part of the Bikurim. They're a separate thing that happen to be brought along with the Bikurim. Unlike the Lacham Aponim, where the Lacham Aponim and the Shnei Kvotim, the Shnei Lacham and the Shnei Kvotim are all, they're all an integral part of the Korban. They're all interdependent, as we learned before. I guess. Or maybe they tried, maybe they tied them by their wings or their feet or whatever. Yeah, that's also true. All right. Onward. Okay, so that's that then. The point is that, yes, the point is that there is a difference between Shtei Alechem and Bikurim, because Shtei Alechem, even though it's true, neither the Shtei Alechem nor the Bikurim actually go on to the Mizeach, but the Shtei Alechem are part of a larger korban, where some part of that larger korban goes on the Mizeach. Bikurim are also mandatory, but the point is, that's the point. You know, the gozlos that come with the Bikurim are not mandatory, whereas the Shtei Alechem with the Kvasim are. Boy, Rami Bachama Merafista. So now Rami Bachama asks Rafista. We're talking about, we said before, this rule, Kol Shemimenu L'ishim, any korban where some part of it is offered on the Mizeach, then we're saying you're also to offer any of the rest of it on the Mizeach, for example, the meat of a chatas, etc. What about Hamala Mitzvah Chatas Ha'oifa Gabi on the Mizeach Mahu? What if a person were to offer some of the meat of a chatas Ha'oifa on the Mizeach? Now, a chatas Ha'oifa, as we learned from Zvachim, only the blood of it is sprinkled on the Mizeach. The whole rest of the body of the korban is given to the Kohenim to eat. None of it goes on the Mizeach. So none of it in particular, chatas Ha'oifa, only the blood is sprinkled on the Mizeach.
So
it's a normal chatas Ha'oifa. Yeah, you have the Imurim offered on the Mizeach. But a chatas Ha'oifa, you don't have that. So therefore, it's a Mahu. What's the din? On the one hand, you could argue, Kol Shemenu L'ishim, Amar Rahmana. Maybe the Torah is saying that anything where part of the korban goes on the fire of the Mizeach, well, in that case, V'hai Eim Menu L'ishim, in that case, a chasa ta'oif, no part of it goes on the fire, because you only have the blood goes on the side of the Mizeach, and none of it goes into the fire. Therefore, maybe there's no Isser to take some of the meat of that chasa ta'oif and burn it on the Mizeach.
Why would there not be?
Because there's no kosher menula issue. None of it goes on the fire, we just said. Oy dilma kosher shmoy korban. Or maybe what the Torah is telling you, anything which is called a korban, you're not allowed to place any part of it that doesn't belong on the Mizeach. You're not allowed to place there. Well, the ainami shmoy korban. A chatas ha'oif is certainly a korban. In other words, Rashi explains, the point of the question is, we learned before from the word, loy sakturu mimenu isha l'ashem, that was saying kol shem menu l'ishim, but on the other hand, you also have the next pasuk begins with the word korban reishis, in context. So the point is, maybe the word korban is also a continuation of the previous pasuk. Maybe we darshan it, loy sakturu mimenu isha l'ashem, korban, that anything called a korban, you're not allowed to place any part of it on the Mizeach that doesn't belong there. That's the point. No, an olaf to oif, we know the body of the bird is burnt on the Mizeach. The question is, a chatas to oif, we know you're not supposed to, because we know you're supposed to give the meat of it to the Kohenim to eat. But if instead you go and burn it on another, this person goes and burns it on another back, is he over on this lav of loy fatidomi men? So the answer is, on the list, there are 5th answers, and kol shashmoy korb, a kol shashmoy korb. That's the question. Not technically it should be, it shouldn't be. Rami Bachama is asking, are you or aren't? On the one hand, it's not kosher mental issue. On the other hand, it's called a carbon. So which one takes precedence? Amale and Rav Chista answers him, kol shashmoy carbon. The rule is anything called a carbon, then the rule is that any, then the rule applies, behind nami shmoy carbon. Well, then a chatasoiz is also called a carbon. Even though none of it normally goes into the fire, nevertheless, the issue is that in that case, you're not allowed to put any part of it on the fire. So the Gemara says ketanoi. It's actually machlokas tanoi. Rabbi Eliezer oimer kol shemenu le'ishim, Rabbi Akiva oimer kol shemoy korban, and the question is my benayu. In that case, what is the practical difference between the way Rabbi Eliezer says it and the way Rabbi Akiva says it? Omer of Chista, and that's what Rabbi Chista says. Sa'af chata so'isi kebenayu. That's exactly what they're arguing about this case that Rami Bachama asked. If you put sa'af chata so'isi, you're over or not. Rabbi Eliezer would say no, because it's not kol shemenu le'ishim. Rabbi Akiva would say yes, because it's called a korban. Since, as usual, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva against another individual Tana, then the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. So that answers Rami Bahama's question. So that's it. So therefore, a person would be chayav. So that person would be chayav. Kol shishmoy korban. Yeah. On the other hand, Rav Omer, Rav says a different answer. Lug shemen shom mitzorda ikabinayu. You could also... Rav is going to say that there's another case that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva could be arguing about. Not only the case of chatas ha'oif, but also regarding the loig of oil that's brought by Matsoda together with his korban. Yeah. Where you have the same thing. Tony Levy. Levy learns a braisa that when the pasuk says kol korbanam, that you Aaron and your sons, the kohenim, receive 24 matnas korbanah, of which one of them says it's kol korbanam, all of their korbanas. That is l'rabos loig shemen shom Matsoda. That comes to include the loig of the oil of the Matsoda. That again, none of it is put on the fire, but it still is called a korban, because the pasuk is saying you kol korbanam. So therefore, you have the same machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer would say that if you poured some of that oil on the fire, you're not over on anything, because not menu l'ishim, and Rabbi Akiva would say yes.
Two cases.
Now Rashi asks the question in that case. The same way, as we said before, the shtei alechem is considered part of a larger korban because you have the shtei kvasim with it. Why don't we consider this loig shemen shom mitzorda part of a larger korban because it comes together with the asham mitzorda and part of the asham is placed on the back. But the answer is, Rashi says, because we learned before that the loig of oil does not necessarily need to be brought with the asham. The person, the mitzorda, can bring his asham now and he can bring his loig several days later. So therefore, they're not necessarily tied together. The shtei alechem and the shnei kvasim all have to be brought on the same day, as opposed to the loy shemen does not. Okay.
And still, you would be the rule would apply.
According to Rabbi Akiva, yes, but not because part of it is placed on the mizbeach, but because it itself is called a korban. According to Rabbi Yehuda, not because no part of it goes on the fire. Okay. Turn it on. We learned in a bright. So now let's get back to this matter of that you're not allowed to offer sa'ur and dvash on the mizbeach. So let's talk further about that. Turn it up on them. Sa'ur bal taksiru. When the pasuk says you're not allowed to offer sa'ur, chametz, on the mizbeach, ainli ela kula, you would think that means only that you're not allowed to bring the whole thing, and we're going to explain in a second what we mean by the whole thing. Miksase minayin, how do we know a person is chayav even for offering part of it? Tamad lana kol. Therefore, the pasuk says kol sa'ur.
Any amount.
A ruve minayin, how do we know also that if you mix sa'ur together with non-sa'ur, together with masa, and it's not even recognizable, how do we know that the person would still be chayav? Tamad lana ki kol. Therefore, the pasuk says, not just kol, it says ki kol sa'ur b'chol d'vash. So therefore, that includes tarot. Okay, the question is my comma. What does the braisa say? What do you mean by kula in mitzvah? Amar Abaye haki comma. So Abaye says what the braisa means is as follows. Let's reread the braisa. Sa'ur bal taksiru. You have an isser to offer sa'ur. Ainli el kezayis. Now it says Abaye, what the braisa means is when it says kula, you would think a person is chayav only if he offered a whole kezayis of sa'ur on the mizbeach. Chatzi zayis minayin. How do we know that he would be chayav even if he offered only a half of kezayis? Kamaloma kol. That's why it says kol. And then a ruve minayin. And then how do we know even if it was mixed in and is not bechlal recognizable, where arguably you would think it's bottle. Nevertheless, it's not kamaloma ki kol. That's how a bialone is a brighter. No, if it said T, then you wouldn't know that it means a half kazayis. Then you would know tarum is fine. If you mixed in a kazayis into a larger amount, then he'd be chay. But if you mixed in half a kazayis, you wouldn't know.
Because it's like a
No, it's not, because they're both falling. They're both falling. They're both including something. Rava Omar, kol includes, we just said, kol includes the half of his ayah, says Abaya, and he includes even Tyrone. Rava Omar,
that's two parts.
Yeah. Rava learns the Braisa like this, Hachikama, Sa'ur Baltakjiu, you're not allowed to offer Sa'ur Amazeh, Aimli Ela Kremeth. Now you would think that only applies if a person offered the entire Kremeth together, made it Sa'ur, made it Chomet, and then offered it, then he'd be Chayev. Chasi Kremeth Minayin, how do we know a person is Chayev even if he only offered half the Kremeth on the Mizeach, meaning he made... No. Abaya said Kezias and half of Kezias, as Moses is going to point out, there's a machlokas between them.
And now
we're saying Kremeth and Chasi Kremeth. Yeah. Now it's not the same thing. The Fader Shema. Wait. So how do we know Chasi Kremeth? Tamad Lema Kol. Eruv and Minayin. And again, how do we know even if it was mixed in? Tamad Lema Kikol. So the question is, what is the underlying machlokas between Abaya and Rava? What it is, Abaya Sava Yesh Kremet Tachas Mishnei Beisim. This is a machlokas that we talked about earlier on the Sester. Abaya holds that a Kremet could conceivably be less than two Kazetim. So therefore,
it depends on
the size of the person's hand. Yeah, we talked about it earlier. We talked about also, Achronim asked the question, Achronim discussed the question, if a Kohen can't physically make a Kohen of two Kazesim, does that mean it's a Baal Mum? Does it mean maybe he can't do Kmitsa, but he can do other Avodas? They talk about, what about nowadays, where nobody has a hand that can fit two Kazesim, what are we going to do on Mashiach time? Whatever, we talked about that earlier. Okay. So a Abaya holds, a Kohen could conceivably be less than two Kazesim and still be considered a valid Kohen. And the Yesh HaKtod, of course, of the Kazayim. And Abaya continues, it's possible, even if a person burns less than a kazayis on a mizbeach, that is considered a haktorah. The point is, in other words, Abaya is saying, given that the pasuk is telling us kol over here, that it's possible for a person to not be makriv a whole koimet at a time, and yet to be chayiv, given that the koimet can be less than two kazayim, that means conceivably you could have a person is being makriv less than a kazayis, and he's still chayiv. So therefore, that's where Abaya says, the key thing is not Kremeth or less than a Kremeth, the key thing is Kazayas or less than a Kazayas. As opposed to the Rava Omer Ein Kremeth Pachas Mishnei Zaytim, Rava will say, by definition, a Kremeth cannot be less than two Kazayas in size. So therefore, Kol can only mean, fine, if a person is maxed with half the Kazayas at a time. But that's still going to be a Kazayas. The Einat Torah, of course, in the Kazayas. You don't have any source to say that if a person is makriv less than a Kazayas, that he should be chayev. Therefore, he's not, says Rava. A person is chayev only if he's makriv one complete Kazayas. But that complete Kazayas can be a half, can be a half or less than half of the Koymet, because the Koymet itself has to be at least two Kazayas.
The Kazayas can be at least
no more than half of the Koymet. Because the Kremeth itself is going to be at least two Kazesim. Therefore, says Rava, you Abaya are saying that a Kremeth could be, let's say, conceivably a Kazayas and a half. Therefore, if the Torah is implying that you're makriv half of it and you're chayiv, then that means a person can be makriv for being makriv less than a Kazayas. Because a half of one and a half is going to be less than a whole. So therefore, Abaya is going to say, therefore, that the Torah is implying that a person is makriv less than a Kazayas and he's chayiv. Rava says, I don't agree with that concept. The Kremeth has to be at least two Kazetim. Therefore, all the Torah is telling us, the Kremeth has to be at least two Kazetim. Half of that, therefore, is at least a Kazayas. The minimum amount a person we hire for is being master of a whole, Kazayas. Okay. It's fine. So now we have, the halacha is like Rava, as it usually is. Okay. So it has to be at least a Kazayas for him to be hired. Okay. Ismar, now we have another discussion on this subject. Actually, it's interesting, by the way, the Rambam, on the one hand, paskin like what Rava is saying over here, that Einach Tara Pos Mikazayas. On the other hand, the Rambam also paskins that a person is chayev for Tal Rubis of Sur and Vash, even if it was much smaller than a Kazayas. Because the Rambam, so one explanation is, the Rambam holds, the Tosfos actually references it over here also, there's a concept in Halakha called Hetcher Mitzaref Le'isu. That in certain cases, we learned that in Nazir, for example, it comes up in Hilchot Pesach, that in certain cases, we say that when you have a complete kezayis, of which part of it is Ister and part of it is Heter. The Heter portion combines with the Ister portion to make a complete Kazayas. In other words, this is if the Heter part became Oster as well. So it comes up in connection with the Nazir, the Gemara discusses it in Stocking. So the Rambam, which is one way of understanding, is that Rambam would understand the same thing applies over here. If a person, if the total amount the person was makriv on the Mizbeach is less than a Kazayas, then nothing happens. He's not Chayv Malkin. However, if that Kazayas contains any amount of Sa'ur and Dvash, even if that actual amount of Sa'ur and Dvash is much less than a Kazayas, he'll still be Chayiv on the ground of the Tarot. Because Heter Mistara places.
That's the principle of the Zaraita?
The concept of Heter Mistara places is Zaraita in connection with a Nazir. The Rambam applies it over here also, the Rambam understands that it applies according to these notes of Kalim. Again, according to the Rambam, if we're saying he's Chayiv Malkus, then it would mean Zaraita over here also. He would learn that that's yeah. According to that explanation anyway. Again, you have other notes of Kalim and other acronym that discuss the Rambam and come to different conclusions. All right. It's fine. Now we have another discussion on a related topic. You were asking before, what happens if a person is makriv both Sa'ur and Dvash? Hamal misur umid Dvash agabi amizeach. What if somebody offers a combination of Sa'ur and Dvash on the mizeach? How many malchus is he chayev? Amar Rava loika mishum Sa'ur. So Rava says like this. Number one, he's going to get malchus for offering Sa'ur on the mizeach. The loika mishum Dvash. Number two, he's going to get malchus for offering Dvash. So the Torah tells us, he's called Sa'ur, called Dvash, let's say it in a Loika mishum eruve Sa'ur. Number three, he's going to get malchus for the fact that there was Sa'ur mixed into the mixture over here. We just said the Torah is saying ki chol Sa'ur and ki chol and the chol Dvash. So therefore, we're learning from that title of it. So therefore, he's chayav also for the fact that this mixture includes Sa'ur, v'loka mishum eruv Dvash. And number four, he gets malchus for the fact that there was honey mixed in over here.
So he has three causes, basically. Sa'ur, Dvash, and Taruva.
And two types of Taruva. So therefore, he says that it, well, so actually, so Rashi is learning that what it means is actually that he's saying that he would get four malchus. So this discusses the pros and cons of that. Maybe we would say that he's only getting three malchus, one for Sa'ur separately, one for Dvash separately, and one for the fact that the Sa'ur and Dvash and the Tarovas. Okay, whatever. The point is, he's going to get multiple malchus. On the other hand, Abaya Oma ain't loikin alav shebeklolus. Abaya says no. If the Pasuk had said, loy sakrivu sa'ur, and loy sakfiru sa'ur, and loy sakfiru dvash, then those would be two separate isurim, two separate lavim, and a person would get different malchus for them. But because the Pasuk says only one loy, ki chol sa'ur v'chol dvash, loy sakfiru mimenu, then that's called a lav shebeklolus, a generic type of lav. So therefore, you can't, which includes two different details, and therefore you can't give him extra malchus for being over on the two parts of it. Now you have many Rishonim have the Girsa the other way around over here. Many Rishonim have the Girsa, and in fact Tosfos discusses various Gemaras where we see that the opinions are flipped around. That it's Abaya who would say that you get extra Malchus in these cases, and Rava would say that you don't. And indeed, the Rambam Haskins, according to the opinion, ain't loikin alav shebeklolus. Because the second version, that's Rava saying that, and therefore the halacha would be like Rava. So Ikada Amri, for now, within that, you have two different understandings. One version is Chodami Alaki. One version would say, okay, at least he's going to get one Malchus for the fact that he offered Sa'ur and Dvash together. Because after all, the Torah says Loi Saktir. The Ikada Amri, another version, another Manda Omo would say, Chodami Loi Loki. No, actually, in this case, he wouldn't even get one single Malchus. The Holami Yachad Lave Kalav de Hasima, because you don't have, what kind of lav does a person get Malchus for, this second opinion would say, only when you have the Torah says a lav that state where the Torah says exactly one thing. Don't do X. The classic example is the Torah tells us, Loi sachsem shobedisha, don't muzzle an ox while threshing the grain, which we learned about in Bavos here. So there's one and only one thing included in that lav. That is the kind of thing for which a person gets malchus. Because in fact, that pasuk is right after the psukim that describes there's a concept of how you get malchus. So we learn from that that's the kind of lav that you get malchus for. As opposed to over here, since the Torah includes two different things in the lav, chol sa'ur v'chol dvash, loy sakfiru, the second opinion would say that's not the kind of lav for which a person gets malchus.
Because the Torah mentioned
two things with it. So again, you have three different opinions over here. One opinion would say that you get separate malchus for each one. One for sa'ur, one for dvash. The second opinion says that you get only one malchus. Obviously, we're talking about the Hasara, yeah.
Mr. Abu Zayat,
So of course, so if we say Hesher Mishkanah for Isser, like we said before, then yeah, that's what we're saying. The Tarum, that's what counts. But yeah.
So to summarize, you have three opinions.
Right. So you have again the way we have it in the Gemara in front of us is Rava would say he gets multiple malchus, one for or one for Bash and one for the mixture, or one each for the two mixtures, depending on the interest. Abaya would say, according to the version we have according to us, that no, you don't get malchus for Lavsha before. So the question is, within Abaya, how many do you get? One version would say that Abaya would agree that you do get one malchus, and the other version would say that Abaya says you get zero malchus, because the only kind of malchus you get is for something where the Torah says, don't do X, not don't do X or Y. X or Y, you still wouldn't get malchus for. Now, the Rambam doesn't pass him like that second one. The Rambam passed him in this regard, like the first one, that a person would at least be chayav the one malchus in this case. But after all, the Torah does say, like that too.
Well, two is one and one.
I don't know what you mean, two is one and one. Meaning, in other words,
but at least one should get
that point. According to the second opinion, it's according to the second version within what Abaya is saying over here, he would. But the Rambam doesn't pass him that way. He says a person would get one malchus for offering Sa'ur and Vash together. So nothing extra for the Talmud is fine. There's nothing extra for Sa'ur separately and Vash separately, fine. But one malchus for Sa'ur and Vash he would get. There's also, by the way, in this regard, I mean, the Rishonim talk about, and the Rambam talks about this in the Shoshin, the other to say from this verse, different Rishonim talk about, there's actually two different kinds of Lav Shabbat Swallows. When we say over here, when the Gemara mentioned over here Lav Shabbat Swallows, there's two different kinds. One kind is where the Torah makes one statement, but you learn out many different things from it that you're not allowed to do. Classic example, the Torah tells us, Lo Yisoklu Al Adam, do not eat upon the blood. And we learned, we talk about the end of the Zvachim, you have a half a dozen different things that we learned from that. You're not allowed to eat meat from an animal before, while it's still moving around. You're not allowed to eat from the meat of a korban before the blood was sprinkled on the Mizeah. The Sanhedrin has to fast on the day that they execute somebody, and on the day that they condemn somebody to be executed, whatever. You're not allowed to eat before you daven, etc. We learned a half a dozen different things from that one process. That's one kind of lobster of process. Where we have the Torah tells us, don't do X. But that X itself includes many different things. The other kind of Lav Shabbat Swallows, a person wouldn't get malchus for. So for example, because it contains several different things. On the other hand, the other kind of Lav Shabbat Swallows is what we're talking about in our Gemara over here, where the Torah says, don't do X or Y. So therefore, if a person does X, he gets malchus. If he does Y, he gets malchus. And if he does X and Y, he also only gets one malchus, the way that I'm unpacking him. By the way, we're going to talk about yet another possibility later on in the Masechta when we get to the sixth, when we get to the next parak, we're going to talk about something where sometimes, there are times when the Torah tells us don't do X or Y or Z, and everybody agrees that you actually get separate malchus for them. And we'll learn there why that is, because it's unusual, but we're going to learn we have an exception to that. The Torah tells us in connection with Chodesh, the lechem v'koli v'chama loisoslu, that before the korban omer is brought, you're not allowed to eat from that new grain crop, bread or toasted grain or fresh grain. And we're going to learn in the Gemara, we're going to learn how we learn that each of those is actually a separate lav, and a person would actually get separate malchus for each one of them. Why it's not like the kind of lobster we're talking about over here, we'll get to over there. It'll be a nice.
So it could be when you have several, you could be either lobster the quallus or each separate one.
Right. So how we know is the Chacham and Darshan for us, and then we'll see over there. Right. There are rules how we'll see that.
Where are we going?
So we're going to get there at Ayin Aleph, Ayin Beis, or there about towards the end of the next paragraph.